Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
World Wide Web, what's up, what's up? It's Kimberly Chow.
And I'm Amanda Dell.
We're Food Book Fair, and this is Recommended Reading, our show on Heritage Radio Network, where we talk about what we're reading, watching, and listening to in and around the world of food media with our friends and family in and around the food world. We're so hyped today to be welcoming Christine Sahadi Whalen of the wonderful Atlantic Avenue Institution, Sahadi's Specialty Grocery, and later on, Amanda Yee, a great chef and friend out in Copenhagen by way of the Bay, doing her thing. You'll hear a little bit more from both of them. But first, with this Amanda Dell, I'm going to ask you what you've been reading, watching, and listening to recently since we last wrapped this show.
Thanks, Kim. I'm going to go a little bit more digital with my selections this week.
Hit me.
So I don't know if you're, hopefully you do remember, and hopefully our listeners remember as well, we had the amazing Sierra Tischgart from New York Magazine's Grub Street on last week, and she talked about my favorite column, the Grub Street Diet, mm-hmm. and then we also for a minute talked about kind of The Cut is New York Magazine's fashion blog, so kind of the fashion equivalent of what Grub Street is on NewYorkMagazine.com.
It was fashion. It's a little bit more lifestyle, yeah. I would say, at this point.
Totally. That's fair. And that speaks even more to my point, which is that they have their version of the Grub Street diet, but it's called Sex Diary. And it's about someone's...
Indeed.
A week in the life of someone's romantic relationships. Whether they're dating, you know, online dating and going on dates, whether it's about their relationship with their partner, we get to follow around them via their record of their week that gets published on The Cut. So I don't want to digress too far, but I read this week's version and I was like, wow, The Cut is kind of cheating in on Grub Street Diet, because there was one part about the Sex Diary that talked about a restaurant, and I was like, this is good. Now, if only these two worlds could combine all the time.
So, well, aren't restaurants so important to romance?
Without a doubt. And I would just, if the editors of The Cut are listening, bring more restaurants into Sex Diary if you can. So here's what the subject of this week's Sex Diary said. She said, "Our neighborhood has one restaurant that I love so much. I'd literally go there with anyone just for this one pasta dish. I suggest it. He writes back instantly that he'll take care of the reservation. This guy is kind of predictable and so eager." And that just made me laugh out loud.
Does it? But what restaurant and what pasta dish?
It doesn't get into that. It's a restaurant in Tribeca. That's all we know. So,
is it the Odeon?
Maybe.
I don't know if the Odeon serves pasta.
Maybe. So I just, yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to, you know, let everyone know that worlds are colliding out there. If you happen to have a moment to take a look at this week's sex diary. I really enjoyed it. On The Cut, New York Magazine's blog.
Does this bode well for the suitor?
I don't want to give too much away, but yes. One word is yes.
When you describe someone as eager, generally that's not a good...
I think they split the pasta, so I think, you know, but that, things went well. And then the other thing that really caught my eye over the past couple of days was Kim Severson wrote this, I thought was a really remarkable article about Cumberland Island, an island.
In Georgia.
Yes. A beautiful photography. This is on New York Times. It was released, I believe, digitally, and will probably be in print coming up in the next couple of days in the travel section. The way she described how remote the island was in some ways. Also, the article was about the one inn that's on the island, and the reason why it's getting some new attention is that it's called Grayfield Inn, and it has a brand new chef. So she wanted to go try out the restaurant, and she went fishing. And also, the other tidbit about this island is that it's where JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette were married.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Got me thinking this morning and got me dreaming of maybe taking a trip out there.
I was once invited out to Cumberland Island.
Really?
I didn't go. I regret it.
I'm putting it on my bucket list. So what are you reading, watching, or listening to?
I just spent the last couple days out in Delaware County in upstate New York toward Albany.
Oh,
with
wow.
Our friend Julian Richards, who was on our show a couple weeks ago. Julian is a former photo agent, a great writer, wayward restaurateur, artiste, radio show host himself. He has a show called The Evening Tickler on WIOX, Roxbury Community Radio. And I went up so I could be on a show on Sunday night with our friend Taylor Foster, who was co-hosting in place of Steve Burnett, a.k.a. at Bovina Farmer. So Julian and Steve have folks that are in and around Delaware County, as well as friends that are visiting. And it just, people come on and you talk about the grand themes of life, and it sort of rolls on for an hour and it just speeds by. We talked a lot about some of the things that we talked about here when he was down here, and some of the things that you and I, Amanda, talk about all the time. About the food scene, downstate, upstate, about dating, about relationships, about people being obsessed with where they're going to eat, who they're going to eat with, talking about who they're eating with or where they else are going to eat while they're still eating somewhere.
That I feel like is a Jewish thing.
I think this is a general New York City contemporary food scene at this moment kind of thing. We talked about how to be engaged in that and not feel like your life is meaningless considering the current political and cultural climate. We talked about planets aligning. And we talked about poetry, and we talked about art and culture and opera and literature and film and being inspired by that and being continued to be inspired by that and having that be a bigger part again of dinner time conversation.
Yeah, sounds like it was a jam-packed show.
I think so. I don't know. A lot of it was also conversations while driving in the car, which I realized maybe I missed some of that because as a New Yorker or someone who lives here, I don't think I'm a New Yorker yet. I just hit my eight year mark.
Two more years to go.
I hear it takes a while. But it's nice talking in the car. And I'm sure there's a lot of walking and talking in New York City. I definitely have some perambulatory conversations with friends. With one of my best friends, Jenny, we call them flaneur dates.
Oh.
Where we walk around and talk. Oh. And then actually we walked into a bookstore the other day and someone had published a book called Flaneuse about women who walk around and talk, because flaneurs, I'm forgetting the poet to whom I should attribute this, Rimbo or Baudrillard or something like that.
They knew you were coming.
They knew I was coming, and I was just like, dag nabbit, someone beat me to this book idea. I think it's illustrated and everything, too. It's very on trend. Anyway, I don't have anything food-related that I'm reading or talking about, but Julian and I, we just sort of went on and on and on the last few days about stuff we're excited about and how to talk about it and how to get that across when you're talking to, whether it's just another friend who hasn't read this book or this poem or seen this movie, or whether you're talking to a radio audience and just getting someone so hyped because you are so hyped about something. And I'm just going to go for the drop lead, and I'm going to read you a poem by Jack Gilbert that I really love.
Okay.
That I hadn't Great. Thought about in a while. And there is a little bit of, I guess there's a food item in here, and it's something that I've seen on friends' windowsills lately.
Hmm.
So I'll just get right into it.
Yeah,
this is from
do.
The Great Fires by Jack Gilbert. Married. I came back from the funeral and crawled around the apartment, crying hard, searching for my wife's hair. For 2 months, got them from the drain, from the vacuum cleaner, under the refrigerator, and off the clothes in the closet. But after other Japanese women came, there was no way to be sure which were hers, and I stopped. A year later, repotting Machiko's avocado, I find a long black hair tangled in the dirt. I highly recommend everybody check this out. Jack Gilbert passed a couple years ago, and I think there was a resurgence in his, an interest in his poetry. I don't think I can even get across how that sounds or what that means, even though I've never had that experience of repotting an avocado or having someone I love pass in that way and trying to make up for it with other people. But dude, the poem is just so good. Anyway, so that's what is getting me going and sort of having me think more about how art and culture continues to inform what we do in food.
I loved it.
Cool.
It really...
I'll lend you this book.
Put that on my recommended reading list.
Recommended reading list,
Lending list.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's... I mean... I think it's relatable, but also makes you really think about what other people's experiences are.
Also, damn, like long Asian hair that does not biodegrade forever.
Well, I can't speak to that, but you can.
That's why this poem speaks to me. So reading Jack Gilbert, I also have with me Maggie Nelson's Bluettes, which we talked about with Sierra last week. Incredible book. She also wrote The Argonauts, which I also highly recommend. All I'm going to do now is just hype these two books again for the second week. Highly recommend those as well.
If listeners out there, if you've read these books, you love them, you want to put them on your list, tweet at us at Food Book Fair.
Comment
on Instagram. Show us what you're reading. We love seeing people's hauls, quote unquote, of what they're reading, whether they're books, magazines, anything that they're into. Just tag us when you are showing photographs of books, which is, you know, something that we hope more and more people will share. And we found that listening up to what other people are reading and recommending has been a great joy for us, and that's part of the reason why we started this show.
I might also say that on the drive down this morning, Julie and I listened to our public announcement podcast from Food Book Fair 2017, but I don't know if that's embarrassing.
No, not at all.
We talked about whether it was self-serving to listen to your own self talk, and you know, neither you nor I are really talking. It's our esteemed panelists from our keynote panel of Food Book Fair 2017. What we talk about when we talk about eating. But Julian says, when you're listening to that, you're just like checking up on your work. It's pretty good. Thank you, Chris and James.
Yes, thanks. Big thanks.
For producing that.
To them. So, and thank you. Also, we're going to take a quick break so that we can properly thank our home away from home, where we reside every Tuesday. Find us in the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn at Heritage Radio Network. Please, please head over to heritageradionetwork.org. check out all the shows, pledge your support so that we can continue to bring all of these amazing shows to life. Again, check out heritageradionetwork.org.
Click on that beating heart.
Yeah, and we will be back with, I am so excited to come back with our guest, Christine Sahadi Whalen, getting to talk to her about one of my favorite stores, Sahadi's. So we'll be back in a moment.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline Raposo.
And I'm Ben Rosenblatt.
And we are Love Bites on Heritage Radio Network.
Our show is all about why and how we love.
Tune in every Monday at 4 as we talk about endings, new beginnings in relationships, about couples who work together and love together.
And what life teaches us about love.
So support our show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on that beating heart to become a member today, and we will love you forever for it.
See you.
Yo, yo.
Welcome back. As we mentioned, we are joined in the studio today with... by Christine Sahadi Whalen, the
with and by,
yes, the third generation co-owner of Sahadi's specialty grocer in Brooklyn, New York, right on Atlantic Avenue. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Our pleasure. So usually we start out with asking our guests kind of what's on their nightstand, what they're reading. So we'll do the same for you. Tell us a little bit. I can't imagine how busy Sahadi's must keep you, but when you do have that moment to check in on your nightstand for a couple minutes, what are you getting into?
Well, you probably won't be too surprised to hear that it's mostly cookbooks. It seems to be food just is something that I'm really interested in, both culturally as well as, you know, in marketing and stuff. So right now I'm reading... Ottolenghi's Plenty, which I love his books. I think that the photos are just beautiful. They really speak to me in terms of desire to make a product or just read more thoroughly. I think that there's a lot of vegetarian stuff, and it's just a very easy to enjoy book. Whether or not you're cooking, it's easy to enjoy. So I'm reading that. I'm reading Falafel for Breakfast, which is a book.
That's such a good title.
Yeah, it's new. It came to me in the mail at the store to see, you know, if we were wanting to sell. It's a new printing from an Australian chef and Michael Rantisi. And so far I'm really enjoying it. I just started getting into it, but it's got a lot of variations of things that we've seen here. A lot of history about his restaurant and what he does and what makes him unique. So I'm thinking that the rest of that book is going to be just as good, also with a lot of great photos. And definitely, probably one of my favorite things I'm reading now is Emily Thalen's Unforgettable, her biography of Paula Wolford.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I love Paula. I know Paula. We've known her for years. I mean, she used to be a New Yorker. And I had read about the book, and I spoke with Emily. She had called to interview my father a little bit about a few things that Paula had mentioned about my dad. And so when the book came out, I ordered a copy right away because I wanted to see it. And it just came about 2 weeks ago. And I forgot about that earlier. I have been thoroughly enjoying that book. Like, it is really it's a mix of recipes and a biography.
Okay.
But I just think that she is amazing. I think that, you know, Paula is just an amazing cook and chef and teacher. And it's been just so far, Emily's done really a masterful job of mixing the recipes and the history of Paula's history. It's been really good.
And what is the title of that book?
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. Okay, great.
I hear that's really, really good.
Yeah,
put that on your list.
Really good.
Wow. Well, maybe for our listeners out there, we could just talk a little bit about what Sahadi's is and the history behind it and why it's such a beloved New York favorite. How would you describe what Sahadi's is for anyone who doesn't know?
As we have many listeners around the country as well as across the globe.
Yes.
Well, Sahadi started out in 1948 on Atlantic Avenue. Before that, we were in Lower Manhattan from 1941, and my uncle even from 1895 in Lower Manhattan. But the Battery Tunnel shook up a lot of the traffic in the Middle Eastern area, the Little Syria area of Manhattan. So we moved to Brooklyn in 1948, and we've been at the same location ever since. We were one store, then we were two stores, now we're three stores, but we're all connected. And we started off totally as a Middle Eastern grocery store, and as the neighborhood changed, we adapted. So the neighborhood went from being completely Middle Eastern to being slightly Middle Eastern, with a lot of new groups moving in. And now the neighborhood is completely there's all kinds of developments around us, so we have a lot of new and influx of new people in the area. I love being in downtown Brooklyn because it's a very culturally rich area, and the people are very open to trying different things. So it's given us a real advantage to expand our offerings. As we expanded the store, we were able to add a lot of interesting and new products. A lot of that was customer driven, and some of that was driven by just the fabulousness of being in Brooklyn right now in the food world. There's so many different small manufacturers making really interesting products. And I mean, my desk is filled with samples from all local producers, and that's a lot of the change has been directed by how exciting the food world is in Brooklyn right now, at least in the last few years, which has been really interesting and fun for us. Traditionally, we did imports, and now we've actually given over an area of the store to small batch producers, which I think the customer base really likes, and I find it really interesting.
Wow. So now the store is really a combination of very traditional ingredients, but also then, you know, a kind of newer interpretation of those, and then plus really highlighting those makers that are in Brooklyn and New York. And so it's kind of a one-stop shop.
We try to have, for the most part, anything that somebody would need to make a meal, you know, or we do a lot with interesting condiments, a lot of imported or imported style, you know, sauces and dips and stuff like that, that people can use to complement their meal, you know. And also we like to do, it's helpful if we can do business with people that we have relationships with.
Right.
So a lot of people buy from us and then they produce a really great product. So in turn, if I think it's a great product and I think there's room for it, we will bring that item in. So it's made the store, the curated mix in the store, definitely more interesting, because there's a real mix of imported things and then, you know, raw materials and then, you know, already done condiments and stuff like that. It's kind of a fun, well, we hope it is a fun walkthrough, you know, just different cultures.
Yum.
Yeah. Well, my love of groceries is well documented, so it's always one of my favorite places to go. And Julie, oh my God, I'm skipping ahead. Christine, I know we talked a little bit prior to the show about some of your family recipes, and that you were actually one of the ones spearheading the prepared foods section, and that those recipes have been passed down from, you know, family recipes going back many, many years. So can you talk a little bit about the traditions behind those recipes and how you've been able to keep those going, plus, you know, new ones?
Yeah, definitely. We're Lebanese and Syrian on both sides. I'm half Lebanese and half Syrian. Both are extremely hospitable cultures, very big on cooking and entertaining and having people over. So despite the fact that we worked in food, we still cooked all the time at home. And when it, the natural progression when we took the second store was to open a cheese department and then to open a prepared foods.
Okay.
So I took a few years and went and did some classes in how to scale up what we did at home to be practical to do in a deli type setting. And we probably do a range of about 300 rotating items, everything from really, really traditional to just interesting items using new ingredients we had, or we do a lot of vegetarian-based food because we sell a lot of nuts and grains and things that are inherently very healthy and make really great room-temperature dishes. And we played around with a lot of different things until we came up with this rotating group of, you know, in the winter we do a lot of more soups and stews, and the summers we do a lot more salads and, you know, obviously cold dishes. But a lot of our customers come in several times a week, so we try to mix it up and we rotate. But the traditional ones, I think it's interesting that the traditional recipes as well as the newer recipes sell about equally.
Okay.
They don't sell more or less than the other. We still do sell, though, the same like kibbe ball recipe or tabbouleh or hummus that we did in 1986, and it still sells really, really well. It's just interesting how, as people have grown up and different people have moved into the neighborhood, that taste is managed to transcend, you know, different cultures moving in and stuff. And we still have very few recipes that we have taken away over the years, which is interesting.
That's incredible.
What's the secret to your tabbouleh that makes it so good?
I know, I'm dying to know about the tabbouleh.
I buy the tabbouleh regularly from the prepared foods case.
I think it's that we hand chop everything. We don't cut corners.
No food processor.
We don't cut corners.
Don't use that RoboCoop.
It's not so good for tabbouleh. It bruises the parsley. And we're particular, even in the store, even like on our hummus, we cook the chickpeas from dry. We don't use cans. We don't cut corners. We make things the way we always did because, number one, we have the raw materials, and number two, we think that the product just tastes better that way. So it's not a magic ingredient as much as every single thing is hand mixed in those dishes, which I think probably makes a difference. I mean, you know, sometimes people try to make it quicker. It's a really long process.
Well, I know you're a Ottolenghi fan, and he recommends chickpeas with baking soda. Do you soak or do you use his method?
We soak and then we cook with a little baking soda.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting how every place has their own, you know, dynamic to do something like that. But a lot of the stuff is traditional. We still make all of our kibbe balls by hand. Traditional style of, you know, you put in the time and the dishes come out really delicious.
Could you elaborate about what kibbe is exactly and the kibbe balls and when they're traditionally eaten or how they're eaten?
Sure. Kibbe balls are like a football-shaped product. They're like almost like a meatball on the outside. Except they're usually a blend of beef and cracked wheat and spices. And then the inside, before they're formed, we cook off lamb and pine nuts and onion and seasoning. And then we have a woman who, that's all she does besides roll grape leaves pretty much, is form kibbe. She holds the ball in her hand and she uses her fingers she's got a lot of dexterity. She manages to form the football shape and she stuffs them with the meat, with the ground meat that's already cooked. And then she seals off the end and she makes hundreds of them every week. We make them large and small for parties. Obviously, bite size is great. For dinner, you know, entree size is good. And then, we sell trays and trays and trays of them every day. They're extremely, it's like the national dish of Lebanon. We eat it all the time at home. I mean, that's my grandmother's recipe. It's the way my grandmother made it. It's the way she taught my mom to make it. It's the way my mom taught me to make it. So it's just, it's extremely traditional, but it is a skill. I mean, mine don't come out quite as perfect as as my mom's did. But they're a great dish and they taste good hot or cold. So we sell them year round because in the summer they're really lean. So they taste good even at room temp.
And there's nothing like it when you make them by hand.
Yeah, we think so.
And speaking about recipes for kibbe and hummus, I understand we've heard that you might have some news about how people can get their hands on your versions of those.
Yeah, we are currently working on a cookbook. It is a long-time labor of love.
Yay!
Cookbook news!
Cookbook!
We're hoping to have it out.
Yes, that's what I was looking for, David. Thank you.
We are hoping to have it out as soon as possible, but it's been a long process to document recipes that you just instinctively do and make sure that they're practical for people to be able to produce on their own. So we have been diligently working on making sure that everything is documented and is, we're hoping it's, I mean, the taste testing has been great. It's been a lot of
invite
fun.
Invite us next time.
I've been cooking a lot of them at home because I need to see how everything works on a home kitchen opposed to going to the store. So it's been, my family's definitely been benefiting from some dishes I don't normally make at home. But it has been a lot of fun, and it is going to be fashioned as I walk through the store. So I think it's going to be a little bit more unique in that the layout is going to be, it's going to be hopefully as if you're shopping and you're having, we're hoping to make the experience similar. So, but it's really been, it's been great as we've been trying to cull through all of these recipes and figure out which are the ones. I mean, everybody I know wants the hummus recipe, but we are working on which is the right right mix for the book and which ones people have been requesting the most over the years. So, yeah, but we're really excited about it. We have a lot of, we're a very old store. We have a lot of old hand-drawn illustrations we used to use for years to make our price list. So we're hoping that we can mix those in too, so that a lot of the book hopefully will be illustrated, but will have been illustrated from things that we currently have.
Cool.
Yeah, which should be fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing the layout once we start fleshing those out. We haven't gotten to the illustrations yet. We just have a lot of folders of things that that have been floating around our office for, you know, 50, 60 years.
This sounds like it's going to be an incredible book and something steeped in history and also, you know, how you can have these recipes today.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. We're working with collaborating with Julie Shelfo.
Yes,
and she's
Julie.
Been,
I wanted to shout you out earlier, and yes. I did prematurely, but now we're...
Yeah, working with Julie. She's great.
Julie.
She's a customer. So that's how I met her.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah, she came and approached me when we were just finishing up the expansion, the third store. And at the time, I couldn't start on another project, so I had said to her, why don't you approach me next year and then we'll see how it goes. And she did, and she has a really great palette. So we have been doing a really interesting collaboration in terms of, you know, just different things. She tells me what she thinks about which areas of the, you know, which chapters things should go in. And then we are collaborating. Actually, I'm actually developing some new recipes for specifically for the book that, you know, to fill some gaps in the cookbook and some things to make it more well-rounded. And some recipes that we do at home that don't translate well to the store because they don't hold. But they're going to be in the book because they're really wonderful recipes. And in a cookbook, you're going to be serving a lot of people right away. So it's not as much, it's a different type of recipe than a deli is. So we're hoping that there's going to be some brand new recipes there that people haven't seen, well, except our family who eats them all the time. But we're hoping that that should be a lot of fun for people.
Can you give us a teaser about those recipes?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We're doing one thing that we always do at home but is never in the deli because it doesn't keep well is this interesting, like a fabulous mixed green salad. And we toast up, well, actually we saute Spanish pine nuts in olive oil and then use the oil for the dressing. So it's got a really great toasted flavor profile. My mother does it all the time at parties. It's like a regular item. We almost always have it. And then we cover the salad with giant shreds of Parmesan and diced Turkish apricots. And then some pepper, baby pepper rings. And it just makes a really great salad. We serve a lot of tomatoes in a lot of our other dishes. So this is a way to have like this really interesting green salad that's colorful but doesn't have a lot of tomatoes in it because we almost always do tomato salads also. So it's a good blend. But it's really great because the toasted pine nut dressing with it, we use a Prosecco vinegar, is just a really nice flavor profile. And I think it makes a fabulous, you know, party salad or just dinner salad at home.
Yum.
Wow. Speaking of dinner at home, if you could let our audience and listeners know, you know, one thing that they could do or one idea or I think people are a little bit overwhelmed about cooking at home a lot of the time. And what's one thing that you would want to tell them about how they can make a meal for their family or any advice that you would give them as, you know, someone in your position, but also, you know, that you cook for your own family and how you fit that into your life?
Well, I think that the problem, I think, with a lot of people's interpretation of cooking is that it has to be too complicated.
Okay.
I am not, at home, I am not a complicated cook. Maybe because I eat so many different flavors during the day that at the end of the day, I want something that's quick and that's really delicious. So I am a really big fan of grilled fish or meat. Like, I will usually do either a grilled fish or chicken with a plain olive oil and herb. You can make something really great if you just have a little pot of herbs. You know, I grow a little herb. I grow a lot in my yard, but I grow an herb garden, and I often will just go out there, snip off some herbs, use a really good olive oil for the marinade, put it on the grill, and then serve it with something simple, especially if it's the summertime. We'll serve it with, like, that green salad and not overcomplicate it. Sometimes when you, if you would approach each dish as if you want to make this unbelievable 10-stage recipe, then you're not going to want to do it every night. It's okay. Just not as practical. I mean, there's a time for that, and that in itself is a lot of fun. But for daily use, I am really big on just going with what is fresh. I always try to make seasonal, which is why in the summer we eat a lot of tomato salads. You know, I'll put a nice cheese with it. I'll drizzle it with some olive oil. I'll put that next to some grilled chicken. So I've got a grilled chicken next to a tomato and feta salad. It tastes great. It cooks in, you know, maybe half an hour. And everybody eats it. Well, I mean, you know, it's a really nice, well-balanced, well-rounded dish. It doesn't have to be complicated, but I think that adding, always having really good oil, having fresh lemons to squeeze on top, and having fresh herbs can go a long way towards making a chicken or a fish really interesting and, you know, enjoyable, and not be too complicated to make it, to dread getting home and having to start with it.
And I know you carry and import a lot of Lebanese olive oil.
Yes.
At Sahadi's. What's the flavor profile of that olive oil compared to, you know, a Greek olive oil or Italian, or how would you describe it?
Lebanese oil, Lebanon is one of the only countries that never filters oil. They don't care about what the bottle looks like. They're not fussy about a lot of stuff, but the oil is thick.
Okay.
So while the flavor profile is very olivey, the oil itself has a more luscious texture, at least I think it does. There are other countries that make very nice unfiltered oil, but I think the fact that all of the oil is unfiltered tends to make a nice mouthfeel, and I think it's a very nice oil to use in dishes. I hardly ever use any other type of oil, because I think that most of the Mediterranean flavors I cook with, olive oil blends with it well, but I think that the Lebanese oil tends to be a really nice, you know, powerful oil.
I'm definitely going to try it the next time I head over, which hopefully will be in the next couple of days.
Wonderful.
Because I haven't had my fix in a while. So a question that I would love to start to wrap up our conversation with is, if someone was coming to Sahadi's for the first time and they could only buy 5 things, what would you tell them to buy?
Besides olive oil.
Okay.
But you can tell us which brand or private label or...
In shopping the store in the normal progression, you walk into the nut department, I would definitely buy roasted almonds and pistachios. We roast our own.
Oh, wow.
In
really?
Brooklyn, in our warehouse. So they come in raw. We roast them. We import them, and then we roast our own pistachios, and we bring California almonds and we roast them. And I think they're freshly roasted every week. So I really... on that whole section of the store, that's arguably going to be my first, like, you have to have it item.
Okay, you heard it here first.
Definitely I would buy hummus, because it's hummus, and our hummus is really great, and we sell tons of it. I would probably buy one of our spice mixes if I wanted to make an easy entree, because we have our own spice blends where they're already pre-mixed for you. And we hand mix them in our warehouse in Brooklyn. So they're, like, really interesting, and they make an easy, easy marinade. I know I always send those to my kids at school, because everything is mixed there. They just have to use it, which is really nice. And I'm partial to arzata bread. I probably would buy one of those on my way out, because it tastes really good dipped in the hummus.
Is that a pita?
It's like a flatbread that we make right in the store, and then we cover it with a za'atar spice, which is like a thyme seasoning with Lebanese olive oil and sesame seeds. And it just makes a really, it's thin. You can roll it or just enjoy it, but it smells awesome, and it's one of my favorite foods.
Wow. I wish we were going right after this show.
Who needs pizza when you have za'atar on flatbread? Don't. I hope they didn't hear that out there. Sorry, they're like dragging me away right now. Bye. Bye.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to see your book. We're already just waiting, you know, by our mailbox for it to come. I know it's a while away, but we're so thrilled that you're going to share those recipes and share some of the history behind Sahadis, which really is a treasure that we have here in New York and in Brooklyn. So thank you for everything that you do.
And congratulations.
Yeah. And if you haven't checked out Sahadis, you definitely can't consider yourself a New Yorker, so you better get over there. Or Sahadis.com as an alternate, but definitely if you can get that, if you can get yourself into the actual store, you won't be disappointed. And again, if there's certain things you love about Sahadis or you're cooking with items from Sahadis, tweet at us at Food Book Fair or
at Sahadis
and tell us what you're making. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we do believe on that hotline bling, we got Amanda Yee, chef by way of the Bay, now in Copenhagen. Amanda, you on there?
I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Hey, girl.
We can. Hi.
Hey.
Hi, fellow Amanda.
Hey, beloved. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Welcome to Recommended Reading. We're so glad to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Yeah. I know one of the reasons that Amanda and I first met at Cherry Bomb, the annual conference about women in food and run by Cherry Bomb Jubilee, run by the publisher of Cherry Bomb Magazine, also who they are the hosts of Radio Cherry Bomb on this very radio station. And one of the reasons we bonded was over books that we loved, over James Baldwin, over writers that we loved. So we're excited to have you on here. So we want to ask a little bit about what you're reading, of course, but also to hear about what you're up to these days.
Okay, well, what do you want to hear first?
Reading.
Tell us about the reading.
Okay. I'm a little nervous because I feel like I'm amongst bookworms. So
it's good to be amongst bookworms.
Well, so I think at the moment I'm reading, like, there's a long-standing book that I have had a hard time, like, normally I'm a pretty quick reader, and this has taken me, like, 8 months to get through. Just because it doesn't really speak to me, but I feel obligated to read it, and that's Zadie Smith's Swing Time. So I'm like two chapters away from finishing that, and there's some really cool things about the book, but I guess I was expecting it to be a little bit more like White Teeth, which I couldn't put down. And so it's just taken me forever. And then I think my kind of scripture lately has been so I was really blessed. Like Nayira Wahid, the poet, she reached out to me and she's like, because I just liked one of her, you know, or I don't remember what I said. I said something to her on Instagram and she's like, I'll send you some books.
Wow.
Some poetry. And I know that was the coolest thing to happen to me in 2016. And so
social media is amazing.
Book mail is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially from like one of your favorite authors who you don't know, you just like their stuff on Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
you're reading her stuff.
Well, I'm reading Nejma right now. And I mean, I've been reading it. It's really like scripture to me. I've just been reading it over and over and meditating on it and letting it speak to me in different ways. And it's so empowering. It's so empowering. And it's like also like this permission to kind of just do you and be okay with that. And I think that's what I need right now, especially if I open my restaurant.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about that? And I think I love that you are being inspired by this art, this writing, but, you know, would love to hear about if and how. And I know it does from our conversations about how that is informing what you're doing right now.
Yeah, so right now I am opening a restaurant called The Blues Woman, which is a kind of a head nod to African-American women who've used their story and their culture and their art and their blues to kind of like map out a way for women to find their way, to find the way to the proverbial promised land. Like, if you think about a blues woman, mm-hmm. you know, it's always from the past tense perspective mm-hmm. where she's thinking about, okay, this was my blues, but now I'm kind of in the glory land. And this is kind of how you get out into the glory land or the promised land or however you want to do it. And I think the cool thing about that is you have to kind of just go through the sadness and the pain and the uncomfortable feelings to get there.
Mm.
And that's something I really like also about Nayara Wahid is she's just like, cool, dude, these are very real emotions and raw emotions, and they're okay to have, which I think is important as a woman because oftentimes society will be quick to label us as crazy or, you know, mentally unwell or unstable because we've expressed some sort of emotion.
Mm.
So it's cool to just kind of shed those things off and be like, no, you know what? I'm really struggling with that, and that's okay. Or, you know, this was a little bit hurtful, or maybe I wouldn't have done it like that again. You know, to kind of have this self-acceptance, and not just the good things, but also in the darker. There's a scripture that I really like, and it's called I Am Dark But Lovely.
Mm.
And I always think about this scripture, and it's just like this duality of who we are. Like, we can be 100% lovely and still have those dark places.
Mm.
And that's what I, you know, that's kind of the story of the blues woman for the restaurant and what I'm taking out of Nejma, even what I'm taking out of Swing Time. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
Could you talk to us a little bit about what brought you from the Bay Area to Copenhagen and why you're choosing to open your restaurant there and what that means to you?
Yeah, so the Bay, you know, is my home. I'm an Oakland native, but I, this sounds what we call in the Bay, like woo-woo.
Give us that woo-woo.
And I just felt like the universe was giving me all these signs that I was I was growing out of my pot, basically. Mm. And there was no room for me, and I needed to find like a place, a bigger pot to grow in. And I have these friends, they're a little bit, I don't want to say psychic, they're a little bit intuitive. And they called me and they're like, Amanda, we were thinking about you, and we just really felt like you should move somewhere cold and north. And I was like, cool, I'm going to move to L.A. and it didn't work. Like, I got hired to work for this movie star who I don't know who it was because and I waited around and waited around, and they finally called me, and they're like, so the old chef decided to stay and keep his job. And so finally I was like, okay, I'm going to move to Europe because I think it's Copenhagen because I've always wanted to move there since I was like 23 and teaching classes here. And I got a job as a assistant to a food stylist because that's something I wanted to add to my resume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just one thing led to another. And I was actually looking for a space to host my supper club, which I do pretty regularly or did pretty regularly. And I went to this community works. My friend called me. He's a writer, and he was like, "I just interviewed these guys. You got to go over there. They're looking. You could probably do your supper club there. Call them." So I call him, and I'm telling him about the supper club, and super enthusiastic. And he just like looks at me. And he's like, "That sounds really nice, but we want someone to open a restaurant. Are you interested?" And I was like, "Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's do that." And so that's kind of how I started to open the restaurant. But I guess before that, I had talked to Adrian Miller, who the author of Soul Food Scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, if you ever open a restaurant in Copenhagen, let me know. And so that kind of had got the wheels turning on, if I had a restaurant, what would it look like? And what kind of patrons would I want? And what do I want the essence and the ethos to be, and what are my values? Like, treating it like it was like a baby. And so I had these ideas, and like literally 2 days later, that guy asked me to open a restaurant. So it was kind of like in my head already, you know?
One thing leads to another.
Sorry?
One thing leads to another when you got that, you're believing in that woo-woo.
I think when you trust your intuition, or at least for me, when I trust my intuition, it never fails me. So it always takes me to a place that's pretty true to me.
Well, we love hearing that from a fellow believer and good energy and a fellow bookworm. And we'd love to share with our community and with our listeners how they can support the Blues Woman and other things that you're doing. So how do we find you?
So you find me on this campaign place called ifundwomen.com, and you can just type in the Blues Woman. And right now we're campaigning for the last 30,000 that we need to just, you know, work on the aesthetics of the restaurant to make sure we have plates and chairs and booths and outdoor furniture and all that stuff. So we're raising money for that. And you can also find me on Instagram under the Blues Woman. I think those are pretty much the only two ways to find me.
I'm on Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. Well, as we have to wrap up, can you whet our appetite with the best reward on what one of the best rewards is that people can get from funding the Blues Woman? Because I took a look at some of them, and they're pretty spectacular. So let us know what some of the best ones are.
I'll tell you the two that I'm... I'll do a high-end one and a low-end one.
Perfect.
And the high-end one, so we have this dope. He's so dope.
A goat?
Artist named...
Dope.
Dope. What? Oh, I thought you said a goat.
No. He might be the goat, but
yeah,
he is the goat.
I was like, I missed that.
A dope, D-O-P.
Got it.
We're working with this really fantastic, I'll use a different adjective, fantastic artist. His name is Esteban Davali. And he is brilliant in his work. And he did a limited edition silk screen print of the Blues Woman. And it's amazing. So if you donate on the high end, you can get one of those pieces. And then on the affordable end, you can get a pre-bought ticket to the Blues Woman for one or two people. We are giving away the Blues Woman aprons, recipe cards. You can get your name on the menu. And we're also doing a mixtape, which is pretty cool.
Speaking of listening to, that's awesome.
Yeah, we have a DJ in London who's curated this dope mixtape. And we're doing that as well. So
sounds like you're hitting it from all the senses.
I'm trying.
We wish you the absolute best of luck. We wish we were over there to check it out, but maybe we'll get over there at
when
some
you
point.
Open.
Yes. Again,
yes.
Chef Amanda Yee calling in from Copenhagen. Check out her project, The Blues Woman. Congratulations.
Thank you. And thank you guys for having me.
Our pleasure. Good luck. And hope you reach that goal very, very soon.
So there you go, fam. That's something to read, something to watch, listen to. We got mixtapes. We got hummus. We got upcoming cookbooks. We got recipe cards. We got all sorts of things.
Recommended reading.
Najma.
Has it all.
Najma, yes. Poetry, Jack Gilbert, Maggie Nelson, Sahadis. Recommended reading does have it all.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Amanda. And thank you so much, Christine, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, please keep those tweets and Instagrams coming and tell us what you're reading, watching, and listening to and what you enjoyed about the show today.
And we'll see you on the airwaves next week again, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. for Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair and on heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks, guys.
Keep reading.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.